Do you think life is simpler after you retire? For some, it's actually more complicated when facing issues about health, estate plans, probate, long-term care, and more. That's why attorney CPA Joe Cordell hosts Elder Talk with Joe Cordell, providing smart solutions for seniors and an open forum for older adults with important questions about their future. Here's attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Welcome to another episode of Elder Talk. Here we are, Susan, the first show of the year.
2019.
And it's only fitting, Susan, if we take this occasion to suggest to our listeners things that we think would be wonderful commitments to make for the year 2019.
That's right. It's the new show and it's a new year. So what do you do in the new year? You make New Year's resolutions.
But now, you know, we've been cautious in talking about these because we don't want to suggest to you things that are impractical, things that perhaps are demanding too much.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to suggest to you goals that are very reasonable. These are things for which there's huge payoff for relatively little effort. So that's been kind of our guiding criterion in discussing these.
Yeah, this is not lose 100 pounds and work out every single day for 5 hours or anything like that. These are very doable.
Very doable. And furthermore, they are of tremendous value. So we've weighed each of these to say, well, we don't want many items on this list. As a matter of fact, I think that we're at 9 items.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, could we have added more? We could have, certainly. And I'm sure some people listening to this show will quibble about whether there are things that are, in their judgment are more important, mm-hmm. that should be on this list that are not. So that's the nature of these lists, is that there's something kind of subjective,
right?
But it should not be the case that 25 reasonable people lined up would look at a list and argue whether the things on the list are even important. I don't think that there's any controversy about the fact that all these are important and other things that might have been suggested would be important. I think the argument is, you know, if we're choosing a top 10 or in our case, a top 9, could there have been things that were substituted for others that are more important? That'll always be the argument by some, but these represent our opinions, which Susan and I took some time. We talked about this, discussed it. And these are the ones that made our list. So, Susan, where should we start? Should we start with, these aren't prioritized, are they? So,
well, not necessarily, no.
Yeah,
but they're all things that we need to do, and some are going to be easier than others to check off the list.
And there are some things that came to us immediately. So we might call those number ones, right?
Right.
But others, even the ones that are 9, while they didn't jump out at us as quickly, they're still important things. So I think we start with the top of the list,
right,
and go down.
All right. So we've all just spent many days or weeks with relatives. Before the new year, we encouraged you to talk to your family members, to have some conversations with your family members while you were face-to-face with them over the holidays, and to kind of just get their thoughts and share with them your ideas about upcoming documents that you might be signing or things like that. So our number one is to have all of your documents in a place where other people know where they are.
So this may seem like something that is less important than other things that might come to your mind, but be patient here. We're coming to other things. But we felt that it's one thing to have gone to the trouble to create a variety of important documents, as many people do. And what's on this list? We'll talk about some of this in a minute, but it could be powers of attorney. It could be healthcare directives. It could be estate planning, trusts, wills, a variety of deeds, a variety of things that if you had a stroke or a heart attack, if you were taken out even to where you passed away and suddenly someone is trying to figure things out, in any of those contexts, I can tell you that one of the most common issues is trying to assemble the stuff, trying to figure out what's out there. And if they do know where an item is, like they may know that there's this house that's owned, but they may not know where the legal work is and whether, for example, it's in a trust.
Mm-hmm. I can tell you now, I have one document downstairs in one desk, and then my husband has something in his desk, and we have a file folder somewhere else. I'm already not doing what I'm saying that we should do.
And some people will even have bank accounts floating around mm-hmm. out there or other assets. And when they pass away or they have a stroke and they can't communicate, then it's not possible to assemble all these things, or perhaps only over time. And to find out about an account 6 months later is not adequate.
Mm-hmm.
So we do want to emphasize that if you're making a list of things you want to accomplish in this year, we think a very good thing for you to do. And again, these are intended to not require a lot of effort. This is something that's easy. Now, as to where you put the documents, it does vary among experts. There are experts who say, place your documents, leave your most important documents, particularly that are of a legal nature, with your reputable law firm, meaning an established law firm that they presume will be around for a long time. Not a bad assumption, but some people don't want to leave their documents in the hands of the lawyers.
Well, what if they go out of business? What if I move? What if I forget to do something with them?
Yeah, yeah. And will my family necessarily know to contact the lawyers?
Right.
So that some people like that idea, some don't. And again, it does depend on whether your lawyer is an established law firm or whether it's a solo practitioner who, you know, will be retiring perhaps in
right.
5, 10, 15, 20 years, whatever it may be. So that would impact that. Some people feel the best place to keep all their documents is in a safe deposit box. There's an argument for that. A safe deposit box is protected. It's protected from physical destruction, such as fires and whatnot. It also, you can count on, in the case of death, that the management of banks, they fastidiously monitor obituaries and whatnot. Their mm-hmm. duty is to disclose documents or the existence of such a place for assets are kept when they find out that someone has passed away. They have a duty to disclose that. The IRS is concerned with it, among others. So they make it their business to monitor those sorts of things. And also, if you have arranged for the person that you want to take over in your absence, if you've given them a document that gives them access, either by way of a co-signature on the deposit on the box itself, or whether it's by way of simply a durable power of attorney that includes access to safe deposit boxes. In any case, there's a pretty good argument for that. Also, it eliminates theft. Mm-hmm. It's official. It's a place where you can say to your family, this is where my stuff is, and it's subject to being accessed by the person you've chosen to access that. But we'll move on to number two. But summing up again, number one is take the time necessary to identify all the important documents in your life, the really, really important documents in your life. Put them in a single place or maybe a couple places, and then disclose their presence there to the people that you would expect or you've empowered to pick up at the moment that you cannot do what you've been doing.
All right, so number one, have your documents in place. Number two, have a plan for asset transfer. Now, you want to explain what that means for us, Joe?
Yeah, it sounds a little stuffy. All it means is that we were talking about documents with number one. Well, number two says that it is important to have in place a plan for what is to happen to your stuff in the event that you become incompetent before you die. So who is to manage your stuff for the balance of your life? And then to whom is the person to receive these things the moment that you pass? And it could be that there are a variety of people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it's a matter of sitting down and deciding, are you going to have a will? Are you going to have a trust? We won't belabor this point. Many of you who've listened to this show, you know that I'm a big fan of trusts. I think that while there are some exceptions, I think for the vast majority of people, a trust makes a whole lot of sense. But whatever you choose to do, even including will substitutes, and those are things such as POD account.
Which we've talked about that before, that's payable on death, right?
Yes, and a transfer on death account, beneficiary clause in a deed. You can have called a beneficiary deed. You can have beneficiary provisions in life insurance, 401ks, other retirement assets. The bottom line is, across the spectrum of assets, pretty much, there's some opportunity to have what's called a will substitute provision. And while these have shortcomings, we won't go into that on this show, I realize that some of you are choosing to transfer your assets in that way. And my point is, And number two is making the point on our list to say that be sure that you have taken the steps to arrange for all those things that you have in this world that are important and you want to transfer to those you love, that you've made provision for that. This is a worthy number two on your list of things to do in 2019. Some of you, that's a checkbox.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. It's a checkbox. Others of you, it was a checkbox 10 years ago.
Right.
Now, you know that it's time to refresh those decisions.
Yeah, that's something I had as a little question on the side. How often should we update those? Is that something we need to update every year or every 5 years?
Not necessarily every year. What I tell my clients is whenever there have been changes.
Okay.
We encourage our clients to circle around once a year. Doesn't cost them anything to circle back and to find out if there's been any significant legislative changes or if there's been anything important in their lives that have happened where it might require change. Generally not. But certainly over a 10-year period, I would expect perhaps some minor tweaks to a plan. I wouldn't expect it to be obsolete entirely. But for some people, it might be, depending on what's happened in their family.
Hmm.
So number two, again, this why is this on the list? Nine things that we encourage you to get done in 2019, meaning January of 2019. Most of these we're talking about January 2019. Some would be throughout the year. But this is on the list for obvious reasons. I mean, what better payoff for the hassle that you go to and the money you spend to have in place a plan that assures that you and your wife or husband are taken care of while you're alive, and then when you pass, the plan that you want in place for those you care about, children, grandchildren, or others, is in place. So this is not, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to suspect that this is a good idea. You don't have to be, certainly don't have to be a lawyer to suspect this is a good idea. But it's made our list in part because I do deal with this for a living.
Mm-hmm.
But if I didn't deal with this for a living, this should be on the list. All right, so that's number two. Let's go on to three.
Well, once you've made that decision, you need to have conversations with your family members. Let them know what you've decided.
Yeah, and again, this is a big payoff. And for most of you, not a lot of trouble. So depending on your relationships with your family members, who knows? Maybe it would result in the equivalent of war. But for many of you, and it's something you don't want to do. So that's the reason it makes its way on a list of things to accomplish in 2019, is that notoriously clients who have the discipline to prepare plans, they have the discipline to develop a solid estate plan, for example, to have in place documents to assure that for their proper care. These same people are very reluctant to sit down and have that conversation with family members that gives them a heads up about key things. And we're leaving a lot of discretion. We're not taking a position on exactly how much to disclose because we know that'll vary a lot and with many of your comfort levels. But we're simply saying that it's important to sit down and be sure that whatever it is, your family members or those that will pick up when you can't, will have the information they need. Sometimes, for example, there will be fights over assets when people pass away,
mm-hmm.
between family members simply because a conversation didn't happen. That
right.
Had that conversation happened, had they had heard Dad say to them, look, here's the reason I'm doing what I'm doing. You may not like it, you may not agree with it, but this is why I'm doing it. Then they're probably less likely to allege that it's undue influence, that perhaps Dad was incompetent, maybe there was fraud. You know, they're hearing Dad state, this is what I'm going to do and why I'm doing it. Another thing is to give people a heads up about the things you want to happen, that suddenly, I mean, it could happen any moment. I mean, keep in mind, if you're listening to this show, I'm assuming you're over 65. And if you're not, still listen up. But if you're over 65, especially, you know, it could happen at any time that suddenly you can't have that conversation anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You may be alive,
mm-hmm.
but you can't have that conversation anymore. So the time to have that, and I'm not giving a lot of specifics about what to say and who to say it to, because I know it varies. But I am telling you that the things that need to be said, and to those to whom it needs to be said, should happen sooner
mm-hmm.
than later.
Right. Don't put it off. Because we have all known people where suddenly they wake up and in the blink of an eye, things have changed.
Yeah.
And so we can lay our plans, but they are all subject to change.
And another thing I'll mention before we leave this one, Adam, is that among the most important things to talk about is what you want to happen with the person who's holding your durable power of attorney, meaning a document that I think we may come to in a few minutes, but it's a document that allows somebody to make decisions for you. That's one of those things worth talking about because it's really this incredibly powerful blank check that that often produces conflict. So that's the sort of thing where it's wonderful for your children to hear. What do you think about keeping the house?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to stay in the house at all costs? Do you mind if the house is sold? Maybe things about where you want to live. You know, maybe your attitudes about a long-term care facility. Sometimes people, though it's less common now, sometimes people are just adamantly, you know, ferociously opposed to being in a long-term care facility.
Well, that is number four on our list, is the power of attorney and healthcare directives. And so that would be the conversation that you would need to have with your children once you get these things established. So if you don't have them established, then what's going to happen in those situations where suddenly you are unable to care for yourself? So that's why we have them on our list.
Yeah. And again, you know, you shouldn't wonder why this is on this list. And even if I were not a lawyer, and I were talking to someone over 65, this has got to be on the list. And this is one about which I don't think there would be any disagreement about its importance. Power of attorney and a healthcare directive. Those both do similar things. But why are we mentioning them? For the reasons we just talked about. And that's that, especially today versus 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The possibility that you're going to spend some period of time in this world toward the end of your life when you are not capable of managing your things is substantial. I mean, it's a substantial risk. I'm avoiding percentages. I don't know. But I know that, and many of you listening can cite examples in your family, perhaps, where whether it was a traumatic event, a single event such as we mentioned, a stroke or heart attack, but it could be dementia that perhaps is slower in its progression. The bottom line is a power of attorney and a healthcare directive gives someone the ability to make decisions on your behalf. Sometimes it's called a durable power of attorney for healthcare. But these are not expensive documents, and they're simple to obtain and execute or to sign. And anyone listening to this show that doesn't have documents in place that accomplish this, you know, should go out and do it in the next, you know, week. So
this week, huh?
Yeah, that's a 1 week assignment because it's so practical to get it done. Now, let me issue a cautionary message to those that are inclined to just grab a form where they can. The content of them are important. So you need to think about content and think about whether it reflects, you know, what it is you want to happen for you. And there are things, powers you can give people that you may not want to give them that a form might have. So I'm not suggesting that you can grab anything that says at the top of the page, durable power of attorney, sign it and feel good. But subject to that caveat, this is not a complicated assignment.
And so what would be the primary thing that you would say, let's say for durable power of attorney, what's the first one or two things, the top one or two things that they would need to think about as they fill that form or as they come talk with you about that?
Well, they'd want to think about whether they want it in effect immediately. And that's we won't get into that on this show, but there are arguments both ways. If they want it to be in effect immediately, then it would not be what's called springing. The springing version is one in which you require two doctors, for example, to certify that you're incompetent. And on that occasion, then it springs into power. A similar thing, you can have a panel. You can have a panel of your own children. So some people prefer distributing the decision-making over two or three people like that in their family, and it's like a panel. It's called a panel decision. So you can have a panel decision by which it comes into effect. But in the meantime, it's not in effect. So that's an issue. Another is the extent to which you want someone to have the ability to do sort of estate planning on your behalf. They cannot change a will under a durable power of attorney. By statute, that cannot happen. Even if you give them the authority to change the will, they cannot. But if you give them express authority, they can amend, modify, even create a trust. They can gift assets, and this is all done, or typically it's done in conjunction with either estate tax issues, which are less common for our clients, and more often they're doing it for purposes of qualifying for long-term care. But that is something that doesn't automatically appear in a document. It's something that has to be expressly provided. And some people want to give their children that power and authority, and some don't. Some say, I have a will in place that's going to take care of all my stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't want that to be essentially emasculated by having those assets transferred into a trust by which they would not go anymore through the estate.
Right.
So if you give someone the ability to create a trust or to amend or modify an existing trust, then you have to know that while they do not have the authority under Missouri law to change or modify your will, the effect is essentially the same because they've taken an asset that would have passed through your will, and now it will never go there because it's in the trust and it won't ever go into your estate. So some people don't want to give that authority because they see that does it have potential to preempt or sidestep the plans they may have laid out very clearly and thoughtfully in their will?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, it does. So that's something to think about in these documents. But one thing that I want to be clear on, this is something that everyone listening to this show should have in place. At this moment, you should have in place a power of attorney and a durable power of attorney, as well as what's called a durable power of attorney for health care. And the health care just does for those subjects, takes care of all those decisions that will relate to your care, which is much more complicated today than it was, you know, 50 years ago. 50 years ago, it was, do you unplug them or not?
Right. That's what was going to be my next question. A follow-up question on that is, what are the top two things that we're talking about for healthcare? That seems so much more complex.
It is.
Than what it was even 10 or 15 years ago. There's all kinds of new advances in medicine and surgeries and procedures and all of those types of things.
Yeah, and it requires judgment. And that's the reason that a living will, which is a document that often comes in, it's often signed in conjunction with a durable power of attorney for health care, just as a backstop. It is simply a declaration of the world of these are the things I want done. Those are often inadequate for the very reasons you mentioned, because the possibilities are such that there's no way you're going to put in a living will all those nuanced variables that can arise with this new, you know, the technological options, the pharmacological options. Mm-hmm. There are options now by which you may be able to sustain for a period of time that you clearly could not have under other circumstances. But you might conclude, I get it. It will sustain me. But under those conditions, I don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
So many people will try to express these concerns through a living will, again, as a backstop. And I don't discourage that at all. As a matter of fact, our clients do that. But what should be the primary governing document in those scenarios? The durable power of attorney for health care. But that brings with it a responsibility. It's the responsibility of you, who would be considered the principal, and the other person is called your agent or attorney, in fact, as to health care they're called, is for you to communicate with this person. I mean, it is a burden. I mean, I've heard people joke that the child that's giving you the greatest headache, give them this responsibility, and they'll agonize over their decision the rest of their lives.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the point is, it is something that children will often agonize about because they didn't really know how their parents felt.
Mm-hmm.
Many of you listening to the show, you think, oh, my kids know how I feel. Don't be so sure, especially regarding something so grave.
Mm-hmm.
Grave is the word.
Right.
Something so grave. So I would say, going back to the earlier statement we made, it made it onto our list, and that's to communicate with your family about these matters. This is included, not just where your stuff goes and why it's going there, but also this is what I care about regarding my health and my life. And so the durable power of attorney for health care and the durable power of attorney, which deals with the financial and legal.
We spent the last few minutes talking about what to do if things go wrong. But when we come back from our break, we're going to spend the next few minutes looking at some things and ideas and tips that will help you live a long and healthy life. Back after this. You're listening to Elder Talk with Joe Cordell, providing smart solutions for seniors, presented by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. And now, attorney CPA, Joe Cordell.
Okay, we're back. Now we're continuing with our list of the nine most important things that we think you should make a commitment to do in 2019. By design, these are things that are not intended to require a lot of time and effort. We want to get big payoff for relatively little effort. Now, we've talked during the first half of the show. I know it was heavy with documents and things of a legal nature, but we tried to identify things that were not affected by the fact that, yes, I'm a lawyer and I do elder law, but instead that, you know, if you're our loved one, whether you're a sibling or our parents, you know, what would we want you, what would we be saying to you if you were our loved one? And that's kind of the perspective we took. So, yeah, those things we talked about in the first half of the show are of critical importance. Hopefully we persuaded you of that. Now, the things that are on the last, essentially, what, four items, five items?
Five items.
The last five items of our list are things that are not of a legal nature, but they're as important.
Mm-hmm.
And some of this is born of experience that we've had in our families and with friends, family, and clients. But here we go. So do you want to head us off with the first one?
All right. Number five on our list is to have a reliable emergency alert tool. Now, what do we mean by that?
Well, many people I know have seen these things advertised where you have a button,
mm-hmm.
and you put it around your neck and you're supposed to.
We all recognize those commercials.
Right. And I have to tell you, I'm skeptical. I have an aunt, which I've mentioned on this show before. I'm still troubled by the way she passed. I'm still not over it. It happened about, well, I guess it's been 4 months ago.
Yeah, this fall.
Yeah. She fell down the steps of her home. She was living in Louisville. She had one of these things around her neck. It was found near her person. She was alive when she was found, but she was probably there for about 18 hours, a number of broken bones. She died days later. So I'm really troubled by the fact that she had this device. I think it must have been around her neck when she fell. It's possible that she pressed it, and matter of fact, I think it's probable she pressed it and didn't get a response. But I don't know that, and I can't prove it. And the records are in the hands of this company.
Oh dear!
So, without naming names, I just think is that a real reliable read for people to have? Who, as we age, we become more vulnerable to things happening, not just in our home, but we could be out walking in the morning. We could be a lot of places where we'd rather be found sooner than later.
Well, and something around your neck can very easily fly off.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what happened in this case. But so this made it on our list because I think it should be there. If you don't have something in place that is with you all the time. Now, what I would suggest instead of something like an emergency button, what I would suggest is something such as a smartwatch. I don't get a commission from Apple for saying.
I will tell you, he's an Apple fan, though.
I am an Apple fan. But I'll tell you that Apple has come out with a watch that is just incredible. Now, granted, it's not cheap. I mean, you're going to spend, I guess, north of $600 or so for this watch. Perhaps you can get it cheaper somewhere. But the point is, it has an alert. It's a wonderful tool by which you can continually have access to people you care about or loved ones or whatnot. You have phone access now.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you have messaging. And it has a function that will identify if you've fallen. Incredibly, and I've seen this tested, where companies have gone out and done all sorts of calisthenics and pratfalls and whatnot to try to trigger this impression when it wasn't really a fall.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't do it. And the time that they fell was when it was triggered. So I can't explain how the technology works, but with a watch phone, and I'll bet there are similar things with some other smartphones, this is something you will have on your wrist, and you can choose to keep it on your wrist, and it will recognize if it believes you've fallen, and if you don't respond, if there's no movement, if it detects no movement for about, I think it's 90 seconds, something like that,
Not 18 hours.
Right, not 18 hours.
Right.
It will immediately make calls to people that you've suggested, or an SOS call to emergency services. In other words, it immediately will act to get you help. And this is something that, when you look at the power of a smartwatch, which is on your wrist, it's there all the time. It allows you to know you have access in the event something happens. And then you have these automated qualities where mm-hmm. you don't even have to consciously use the device in order for it to signal that you need help. Additionally, now it does heart rate. Mm-hmm. It does ECGs, EKGs. EKGs. So it's a marvelous tool, I have to tell you. Now, some of you I know are maybe a little phobic about technology,
right.
So I know this is going to fall on deaf ears. For you, then get a button of some sort. Get some tool that you have with you all the time. But I'm suggesting that you can do far better, those of you willing to undertake it, and that's to get a smartwatch that can serve this purpose for you. It won't fly off when you fall.
Well, and that's what's huge, I think. Now, this service, do you know if there's a fee?
No, I mean,
for the monitoring or the SOS call?
Yeah, well, if you have the phone service, then it'll automatically
trigger
it. Yeah, if you and that's really, I know it's not cheap to have the cell service, and some of the people listening to this show, they're having to count their nickels and manage tightly a budget, but I just think that a tool like a smartwatch can just be wonderfully helpful in more ways than one. And while I could mention many other ways, the purpose of bringing this up now, the reason it's on our list, is that I think having a reliable emergency alert tool, whatever that is, I think it's very important. And that made its way onto our mm-hmm. 9 suggestions for the beginning of the year for people who are over 65.
All right, moving on to number 6. Here's one that we've probably all heard and we probably aren't as good at as we need to be.
Yes, yes. And I'm a big fan of this one, too.
It is walking program. Get those 10,000 steps in. Shoot for that anyway.
Yeah, and set a goal. Now, I wanted to say 10,000. Both Susan and I, are fans of this approach. But some of you who aren't walking at all, maybe it's 5,000. But this is a reasonable goal. This is not saying go to a gym and lift a bunch of weights every day. And let me hurry to emphasize, while there are benefits to that, if you're only going to do one thing, I think most health experts now agree mm-hmm. that it's the simple act of walking.
Right.
It has huge body-wide, system-wide benefits. It benefits your musculoskeletal health. It mm-hmm. benefits your cardiovascular health. It's just it's a marvelous, marvelous exercise. I would argue probably the best devised for mankind mm-hmm. is to walk. It's good for your back. Many people think, I rest my back by sitting in a chair. Oddly enough, your back actually is healthiest and receives the nutrients and whatnot it needs, the circulatory benefits, from walking much more than it does sitting.
Well, and that was something I was going to add, is that getting the blood flowing is so much better for your mental health. And there are studies after study after study that talk about the just movement and keeping your blood moving and everything through there helps your mental ability and helps delay Alzheimer's and dementia and things like that as well. So it's a very simple little thing to put your tennis shoes on and head outside for a walk. Now it's cold, so you can either join a gym. You could do that.
You can walk around the house.
You can walk around the house. We have talked with some physicians before where they mentioned a client of his or a patient of his where he did that. He had one of those smartwatches or a Fitbit or something like that. It would go off and remind him of, hey, you haven't walked in the last hour. So he would stand up and walk up and down his hall. And so that's all it took. And this physician that we had interviewed earlier has said that his mental ability was completely reversed. He had been having some issues with memory, and just the simple act of walking and getting a little healthier made a huge difference in his life.
And it really is huge. And some people are discouraged because they think, oh, that seems so little compared to this world we live in, where there's all this talk about extreme sports and mm-hmm. marathons and whatnot. First of all, I would argue that many of those are not consistent with health. I would argue that there's a point of diminishing returns, and I think many people are far past that,
mm-hmm.
or into that. So this made our list because of the huge, huge value. As you mentioned, Susan, it's cognitive, it's physical, it's simple. It's simple. You don't spend money to do it. I'll tell you a story. My wife and I had been on a cruise, and this was when did we go on this cruise? It was probably around 08, 09.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lady there who was walking on the deck, and I saw her walking on the deck, and it was a small ship, so you develop relationships with a number of the other passengers. And I'd seen her walking a number of days while we were on this, and so I mentioned to her, I said, so you get in your exercise? She said, well, no. She said, yes, I do, but I have a goal this year to walk, 150 or over 1,000 miles. It was like 1,500 miles.
Okay.
It's my goal to walk like 1,500 miles this year. And I said, well, how do you know if you've walked 1,500 miles? And she said, well, she says, I have this thing. And she showed it to me. She's wearing it on her side. And she says, it's a device that keeps track of my steps. So it's a type of pedometer.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what is that brand? And it's the first time I'd ever heard the brand. It's long before they were famous and popular. And it was Fitbit.
Uh-huh.
She said that, I asked her the name of the brand. She said, it's a Fitbit. So I'd never heard of a Fitbit. And at that time, most people hadn't.
Right.
So I researched it. I bought one. And I can tell you, I have had one on me every day since about 2 weeks after that event, probably 4 days after that event. Very shortly after we got back,
mm-hmm.
I bought one. And at that time, it was something that went on your belt.
Right.
And I've over the years, I've worn something on my wrist, and now I carry something in my pocket. But it's a Fitbit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a form of one of the Fitbit devices. And I have one in my pocket now. And I can tell you how many steps I've walked every day since then. And it didn't start out being 10,000 steps a day.
Right.
For me, it was much more modest. But I can tell you, my wife will corroborate, if it's 11 o'clock at night and I haven't gotten in my steps, I'm walking around. And she'll tell me, sometimes I'll be in the bedroom walking, and she'll say, she'll say, look, I can't sleep. Why don't you go in there? So I'll end up going to the living room and getting in my steps. So this is on our list because it doesn't require a lot of effort. And I'm totally persuaded that of all the exercises you can do, mm-hmm. that not only is this the simplest and the cheapest, but it's the best.
Right.
It's the best. So it's made our list. It's doable.
All right. So once you're walking, now because you're in such good health, number 7 on our list is get a physical.
Yeah, this isn't sexy either. but we don't have anything incredibly original for this list. But that wasn't our criterion, is to come up with things original. Our criterion is to identify things that are the best things you can do to get a whole lot done without a lot of effort. And can't we all agree? How much effort does it take to take a physical? What are the ramifications?
Mm-hmm.
What are the ramifications? And it's the sort of thing that you take a couple of hours to do, and you will find out information that can make the difference between life and death,
mm-hmm.
over the next year.
Well, you know, I had been one of those people this year that I had not gone and gotten a physical for a while, and I thought, oh, I just need to get this done. So I did get established with a new doctor and that kind of thing. And I saw a number, the doctor's not concerned about it, but she did some blood work and I went, oh, I don't like that number. So I have made some conscious decisions this year to go, okay, we're going to watch this a little bit more than I needed to. The doctor's not concerned about it. Oh, you're still in the normal range, but it's more than it's closer to that not normal range than I wanted it to be.
Yeah. And physicals have this, this miraculous effect.
Mm-hmm.
It's so important, our physicals, that insurance companies, and I can tell you this is because we make our decisions each year for our employees through Cordell and Cordell and Cordell Planning Partners and Cordell Practice Management Group. And so we have probably 500 or so employees, and we get a substantial discount in the amount we pay for health insurance if they do nothing more then go get a physical.
Right.
They're not required to implement the changes. That's not part of the deal. If they simply go and get the physical, then there's like 15% or 10% plus reduction.
Wow.
And what that means is insurance companies, who you can be sure, study the research. The research shows that people who may not care much about their health, if they're even if they're kind of forced to go because mm-hmm. their employer is saying, look, you got to do this if you're going to get otherwise you don't get the same deductible.
Right.
So they schlep to the doctor and get this done. But even those people who you could say have the least motivation, once something is called to their attention, not all of them, but studies show that a substantial portion of those people will make changes in their life that
right.
will affect their health.
All right, quickly moving on. We've got about 4 minutes left. So
four
number
minutes.
Eight, yes, commit to a social club and activities. Eight and nine kind of go together. But
well, this is a product, I'll tell you, of studies and articles that have appeared lately that indicate that people who are getting older, the elderly, are becoming more isolated.
Mm-hmm.
Article in the Wall Street Journal just this week.
Mm-hmm.
Another that I saw in Forbes last week talked about this issue, and it's becoming a crisis where all the bad things that flow from isolation, lack of attention to health, depression,
mm-hmm.
even suicide among the elderly.
Mm-hmm.
So all these things flow from this condition in which people withdraw from the social relationships that they've known throughout their lives and or social involvement. And it doesn't matter so much whether these people are family or whether they're friends or even if they're strangers, as long as a relationships and interaction happen. And that's what's really important. And so this made our list because some of you don't need to hear this. You're very active socially. So done. You can check this one off.
Right.
But those who are not, those who, because of physical limitations or whatnot, they just no longer are doing those things.
Well, and we have all known people that have difficulty with mobility, or they no longer drive, or they no longer can get out. They're not as comfortable driving in the evening, maybe. So they are much more isolated simply because they're aging. And
mm-hmm.
we're suggesting take steps to try and alleviate that.
Yeah. And I would argue that there are solutions for
mm-hmm.
all those people, meaning for some it might be that they have to make arrangements for someone to transport them. Others, it might mean that they will have to develop relationships that they've never had before, so they don't know those people
mm-hmm.
yet. So the way we expressed this when we were thinking about how to describe this item on our list, we say, join a club or other organization requiring frequent and varied social interaction.
Right. That's the ninth point, is that you need to have the frequent and varied social interaction.
Yeah. And this, again, it's like running. There's almost a magical benefit that comes from this. We know that the cognitive benefits associated with regular social interaction are huge. It's been documented by numerous studies. There's no question that your brain, your cognitive powers are positively influenced by social interaction. Additionally, there's the emotional, the mental health that flows from that interaction. It requires you to move and to be out and do things. So this deserves its place on a list of whether it's the top 10 or the top 15 or the top 20. But it deserves its place toward the top of a list of things that if you're not doing them, if you're among those in our audience, 65 and older, who've allowed yourself to become isolated, then now's the year to make a commitment, to go out, join an organization that's going to require something from you in a social way.
Well, I've known people, they join a quilting group. They join a bunco game. They have a book club. It doesn't have to cost a lot of money. It doesn't have to be this really super organized thing. It can be bunco once a month, once a week, whatever interests you.
Yeah, a church men's group.
Right.
But again, there needs to be regular, frequent, varied interaction. So each of those adjectives is important, especially the frequent.
Mm-hmm.
It's not enough for you to get together once a month. Choose an activity that's going to require frequent participation. Where are we on time?
All right. Well, we are out of time. We made it through our list, though.
Time flies as always. Well, there it is. Another episode of Elder Talk. Till next week.
You've been listening to Elder Talk with Joe Cordell, providing smart solutions for seniors with attorney CPA Joe Cordell. Listen again next Saturday for another edition of Elder Talk with Joe Cordell, sponsored by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. For more information, visit eldercarelaw.com. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely on advertisements.